This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Another blow to democracy. Defense attorney Lynn Stewart given a 10-year prison sentence.
70-year-old attorney Lynn Stewart was resentenced to 10 years in prison by Manhattan District Court Judge John Cuddle after an appeals court ruled that her original 28-month prison term was too light. As the 120-month sentence was pronounced, attorney Stewart's supporters, who packed the large overflow courtroom, gasped in disbelief and dismay. Sobs were audible.
Attorney Stewart, visibly shaken, rose slowly and said, "I'm somewhat stunned, Judge, by the swift change in my outlook." Then she said, "We will continue to struggle on to take all available options to do what we need to do to change this." She added, "I feel like I let a lot of good people down," to which her numerous supporters responded by calling out their belief in her and pledged ongoing support.
The sentence was the latest grim chapter where the government has used Attorney Stewart to send a chilling message to the legal community to be wary of representation of defendants whom it disdains the view of. Now, excerpts of the reactions to the resentencing of Attorney Stewart from her attorney, Jill Shallow, her family, and supporters who vow to intensify their efforts to free Lynn Stewart.
I listened to all the arguments. What does this say about the system that we function in as lawyers? Tell us something about how we can continue to support Sister Lynn Stewart and what this decision means.
First and foremost, we can support her with our letters and with our thoughts and with our prayers, because she is going to need them. 10 years is a lifetime. She needs us to organize. She needs us to think creatively. She needs us to work with one another and to overcome whatever differences we may have amongst ourselves.
Jill, let me ask you this. What are the next legal steps that are taken? Obviously, we have to continue our support, the letters, the mobilization. Legally, where do you go from here?
Legally, Ms. Stewart has to sit and consult with her lawyers about what the next steps are and how to proceed. There are various options available, and to discuss them now would be way too premature.
How much do you think this chills the legal system, the system of young lawyers coming up who we would want to be involved in participation in some vestige of democracy, i.e. the right to due process and defending particularly people who the status quo may despise?
Other than Lynn, that's the greatest loss, is that Lynn has always been a beacon for the young lawyers and the lawyers who are learning what it means to represent the unpopular and the hated and the despised and give to them the same quality of legal work we give to the people on Wall Street or on Main Street. And unfortunately, I fear that those lawyers will look at where the line is and say, not only do I know I can't cross it, but I'm afraid to get too close, because the government is going to put me in the same place with my client, and it's going to be unable to distinguish my advocacy on behalf of my client from my own beliefs and my own actions. And the risk will be that they won't take those cases, or if they take them, they won't do them as well.
Jill, thank you for the work that you do. Thank you for speaking to us at such a difficult, painful moment.
Terrible day.
Ramsey Clark is certainly a lawyer and a friend of Lynn. What can you say about this verdict of 120 months for the people's lawyer?
Well, it's a tragic miscarriage of justice and misunderstanding of truth. The idea that Lynn would abet terrorism is contrary to everything I've ever thought I knew or understood. But we punish ourselves, and we'll pay the price for it until we remove the scales from our eyes and see the truth as it is. The manipulation of the fear of terrorism that leads to our huge military budget, our military and industrial complex that dominates so much of our country, including so much of our political life, causes us to spend more on arms than all other things combined, and spend more on arms than all other countries combined. And until we correct that, we'll be a menace to life on the planet and future of our children.
Thank you, Ramsey Clark, again, for all that you've always done. Bren, I know this is an ugly moment, but we love you, we love your family, we love Sister Stewart. What do we need to know about how to keep your family strong and how to release our wonderful champion.
Mom wanted to thank all the supporters. First and foremost, her legal defense and the family and friends that have been here all the time. That's what we can really do, is just continue to support her. Just stay out there, stay loud, stay on their case. Don't let them shuffle her around and sweep it under the rug. And I'm sure that she's seriously considering appealing, and we'll know that in a couple days. And she said to be flexible, keep her options open.
And what do we do to keep you strong, sister?
Woo! I'm upset. Whatever you can do for her is what you could do for us. That's all you could do.
And I have to say, somebody I've always seen in this process, a beautiful, young, strong woman who is a granddaughter. What do you have to tell us?
I'm just really worried about my grandmother. I'm not sad for me or my family. I'm sad because, like my mom said, it's a life sentence, and I don't want her to die alone in somewhere cold when her whole life she's spent helping other people. So I'm worried about for her. I'm not worried about me.
Thank you. I got three sisters here who have struggled long and hard, as Lynn has, on behalf of people who are oppressed, of people who have been despised by the status quo in this society. Why don't we start with Nellie Bailey? What do you think the significance of this sentencing is?
This was a political decision that emanates from the White House and Obama himself. This was a career move on the part of the judge to be remanded in a higher court to go in and resentence, and it was in order. And I thought that the judge was extremely nervous at the end of it. He could hardly defend his decision. This flies in the face of the number one terrorist in the U.S., Luis Posada Carriles, who bombed the Cubano airline, killing all aboard the entire fencing team of Cuba. He fired a mortar into the city of Miami. He has been described by the FBI as the number one terrorist in the world. Yet he is free in the city of Miami, and there is no attempt on the part of the Obama administration to arrest him.
Esperanza Martel, again, someone who has struggled long and hard, certainly who knows of the work of Lynn Stewart. What do you think this is about today? What does it mean for people in struggle?
There's no justice in America. There's nothing new or novel. We know this. This was a decision that was made before. They shouldn't have wasted people's time for 2.5 hours and then said that she was giving her 10 years. When he could have said that in the beginning, because it was this decided. And what it means for us is we have to up the struggle. We have to take the struggle on actively. And the people keep political prisoners alive. And it's up to us to write to her to make sure that her defense committee has the money it needs to continue to do the political work. And we have to take in consideration her medical condition. We need doctors who will challenge the state. And we need to free Lynn Stewart now.
What does this do to the legal system? What does this do to any concept of democracy in this country?
This is a very disappointing day. I don't suffer any delusions about the criminal system that's in operation here. I apologize for being a little upset. I have been crying, actually, in court the entire time. Lynn Stewart is a political prisoner. When the Court of Appeals sent a directive to Judge Kotel, I thought perhaps he would see it as telling them that he sat through the trial and he presided over this case and he saw everything that happened for the 9 months. I actually sat through much of that trial, and that he would have held his ground, and that, as I said in my letter to Judge Kotel, that his only allegiance would have been to justice for Lynn Stewart. That his allegiance would not have been to perhaps being a appointed to the Court of Appeals. And I'm not suggesting that Judge Kotel has that allegiance, but I cannot fathom in my mind why he sentenced this 70-year-old woman who has worked for the community, who has done all that we are commanded to do as lawyers, to 10 years in prison. I'm particularly upset about the issue of political prison, as my comrade Esperanza has indicated, because last night as I lie in bed and thought about coming here today, I get a message from Sundiata Okoli, another political prisoner, that he has been given a 10-year hit at the age of 73, that he will not see the parole board until then, too. So it's a lot for us to do, and we have to step it up. I don't know what the time period will be when Lynn is released, but we have to do all that we can to see that this does not happen. It is definitely a very chilling day for me. It's just a very, very upsetting moment, and I'm glad that I came. I'm glad I saw Lynn and I waved to her. And I'm glad that we're here, and we just have to continue to make freedom a reality and not just some illusions in this country.
And we are speaking with?
We're speaking with Florence Morgan, who worked as an attorney and also who is very passionate about political prisoners' issue and is very much involved in the cases of particularly Sundiata Okoli and working very hard with his case.
What do you think this means? This was not the Ashcroft administration while they brought the initial charges. This was a Democratic administration that was asking for an enhanced sentencing. So what does this say to you about the political time that we're in and how we have to analyze it and proceed from here?
Once again, it depends on people's alliances, or the whether it's Democratic or Republican. It is an alliance. It really is, and I don't want to sound flipped, but it's something within your soul and within your conscience to tell you to do the right thing, and that your allegiance should only be to justice at all times. That should be the only allegiance, whatever the administration is. And apparently that does not happen. It is superseded by something more important for people.
It's superseded by the body politics. And in this case of the Obama administration, what we are seeing is a continuation of the Bush doctrine as it relates to the treatment of political prisoners. The Justice Department under Eric Holder had every opportunity to side with justice over that of politics. This was intended to send a chilling message, not only to the legal community, but also to the judicial branch, that you have to abide by the political program, which is why this resentencing was imposed by a higher court. This U.S. oligarchy is coming down on the people here with political repression that we cannot begin to fathom, and it is only going to get worse. Our struggle has to continue with Lynn and beyond Lynn.
And what can we understand about what happened here legally today, and what are some of the actual steps that Sister Lynn Stewart can take to ultimately be released from this tentacled octopus of right repression that was experienced here today? We'll go back to Esperanza Martel, and then we will return.
First of all, I think that to think that there's a difference between the Republicans and the Democrats on the capitalism is an illusion. This country is run by the bankers and Wall Street, and that is why Lynn is in prison and why we have so many political prisoners in jail, people who are innocent, who didn't do anything. And that's why at this time, the situation in Puerto Rico, where the police are beating students for asking for a reduction in tuition and putting people in jail and tear gassing people, this is part of capitalism and colonialism and imperialism. You want to add to that?
Support of the Defense Committee economically, because that's what's needed. We have to really step it up. Now, I understand that there should be an appeal, and I'm wondering an appeal to what body at this point? I suppose it's the U.S. Supreme Court that the next appeal would be to. I'm worried. Do you appeal back to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit? That is the very court that directed and bullied Judge Codal into making a decision of this nature. The people are the ones that are the propellers of justice, and I firmly believe that. It is the people that have to keep going forward and moving forward and not stopping until not only Lynn Stewart but all of the political prisoners issue that this country lies about. This country lies that it does not have political prisoner. We know that Lynn Stewart is a political prisoner. We know that. She was initially given 28 months because the judge saw that something he had to give her. Now he gives her 10 years because of a political decision. That is a political prisoner.
Thank you. Brother Ralph Poynta, partner, political ally of Sister Lynn, one hardly knows what to ask, but what does this mean for your family? What does it mean for Sister Lynn? What does it mean for the politics of this system, this horrific, outrageous 120-month sentence?
What it means is the government has taken their stance. There is no chance that they are going to do any reform or any backing away from this position of determining that the American people will be crushed. They will lose their rights unless they take the position that they're going to stand up and take them back.
And brother, what do we do to support you and your family?
The same as you have been doing, because before this, we discussed the possibilities. And this is one of the possibilities we discussed. But it changes nothing except our tactic. What are we going to do to fight now? And we may jump from the frying pan into the fire now, and I'm talking from the Second Circuit to the Supreme Court, for hope that that could be an arena. We're always recognizing that each day the world circumstances can change. Internal circumstances can change. All of these things will have a bearing on this court.
And I don't want to intrude too much on a personal moment, but what did Lynn say as you had an opportunity to meet with her after this horrific sentence was imposed?
We understood the possibilities, and we pledged to each other that nothing has changed from this year to last year, from this year to next year, and how many every years it takes in the struggle to win. Nothing has changed.
Ralph Poynter, what can I say? Thank you for your decades of dedication and now sharing a member of your family, a loved one, with the movement. And we will make sure she will return to us.
Thank you.
Now, Democracy on the Line, the prosecution of defense counsel Lynn Stewart with Ramsey Clark, former U.S. Attorney General and co-founder of the International Action Center, from the support rally at Judson Memorial Church. Let's listen.
Lynn got in this trouble through me. It was July, I think, evening in 94, and we were desperately looking for a lead trial counsel for the Sheikh. And Lynn came up to the office, and for about an hour I described the case, set for trial in September, 12 defendants, thousands of hours of wiretaps that had to be gone over and documents that had to be gone through, and a near impossibility, but also the importance of the case as I perceived it. Lynn was Mother Courage personified. Lynn's courage compelled her to do it. And she knew the stakes, not only the people directly involved in the case, but the growing war on Islam, which some call the war on terrorism. And she plunged in. The case went on for 9 months, then brilliantly fighting it every inch of the way. The trial was hopelessly unfair. The jury selection itself, done by the judge, and so limited that, I mean, the blind sheikh had his picture in the paper every day. This was before we knew about Osama bin Laden. He was number one in these days. Of course, he was totally nonviolent. He couldn't be violent. He was blind. Within 10 months of his birth, as poor as you can get in Egypt, and that's as poor as you can get, parasites infected his eyes, and he never saw light again. Family was too poor to, they all had to work. But they had an uncle who was, this isn't a formal thing, but he was a guy who hung around the local mosque and cleaned it up, prepared it for the prayer calls and all the rest. And he had to be there. So they put little Omar up there with his uncle. And in about 6 years, somebody discovered that he could recite all of the prayers. By the time he was 15 or 16, he became what they call him Hafez. He had memorized, with help obviously, the entire Quran. Very, very few people ever do that. It's quite an honor in that religion. He went on because now they could see that this was a unique mind and character to Al-Azhar University, which is the greatest Islamic university certainly in Egypt and probably in the world. It's over 1,000 years old. He graduated with a PhD, highest honors. He was tried in Egypt for involvement in the murder of Anwar Sadat before a political military tribunal. I'd had a couple of cases before that tribunal, and the facts didn't matter. If they decide they didn't like you, you got it. But the country is Muslim, and they didn't have the guts to convict him. because they knew that every Muslim would understand that Islamic scholars and imams don't give orders. They don't tell you what to do. They read the Quran, they tell you what the Quran guides us to do in our lives. And he was acquitted twice. We've just learned this year, at least I have, and I don't think it was known publicly, he wasn't in the investigation. I mean, FBI agent investigating a bunch of guys who are planning and mixing up explosives and stuff like that, then go off to a mosque 30 miles away and talk and see whether a blind sheikh is involved in it. But the way it happened, and this comes from Mary Jo White, who was the United States attorney in charge of the office at the time. She said, as of Andrew McCarthy, who was the chief prosecutor, as to why the sheikh was included, he did it, plain and simple, that's the answer. And he did it on an unbelievable ground by seeking to expand counts for what people did to a sedition count. The lead count is a sedition count. It's not facts, it's belief. Remember the alien and sedition laws and all the rest. We've never really believed in sedition. And they had to drive to Washington to get permission. This is after the case is developed, so he was added right at the end. But then all of a sudden, he's the first defendant, and some of the guys didn't even know him. Some of them went to his mosques. Some of them really loved him. He knew some of them. But he took no action. He couldn't take action. How could a blind man that couldn't speak English and couldn't see and didn't know these United States or anything else make any difference? We got through the trial, and it was heartbreaking. We all realized that we had a duty as lawyers to continue to help the sheikh. He had two life sentences. He had diabetes. I mean, he was in the hospital during the trial, part of the time. We had recess, of course. He had diabetes. It was terrible. I mean, open sores between his toes and things like that. Hard life. He paid no attention to it. His spirits were always good. He loved Lynn more than anybody. I think the best thing I ever did for the idea that men and women don't respect each other in Islam is the way Lynn and the sheikh loved each other. They would meet and talk for hours. He had total confidence in her. The sentencing is, I personally believe that the SAMs are an abomination. It's like an oath. I always refuse to take an oath. If you don't trust me, that's your right. But don't expect me to work with you. Unilateral trust doesn't work, you know. You got to trust each other. You can't take an oath and then... And the SAMs are like an oath where you say, I won't do this, I won't do that. We signed them with great reluctance, but we couldn't abandon the sheikh. We then gave up all of her practice, really, for 9 months, all of her clients, making practically no money. I don't think we could scrape up $3,000 a month for expenses and everything else for them. After that, our effort was to keep the sheikh's name before the public. He's an international figure, because if he gets lost in American prison and isn't known, there'll be no pressure any place in the world to get him out. And also to begin work immediately to try to get him transferred to any Arab prison where his isolation is total. You can be in solitary confinement, as many people are, but he can't read because he can't see. He can't read Braille anymore because his physical condition has reduced the sensitivity in his fingers. He can't read Braille. He can't understand English. None of the guards or medical people or anything in the prisons, with rare exception, they won't let him associate with any other prisoners. There are very few Muslims or Islamic-speaking people comparatively in the prison. It's total isolation. Can't watch TV, can't see it. And we had to try to work as best we could. I don't know that Lynn did anything I didn't do or some of the others didn't do. We're all working as hard as we could to keep his image alive and his life alive. And I went to Egypt a number of times and thought I was making some progress, went to a couple of other Arab countries and got offers. But the U.S. wouldn't agree like they do so quickly on this Russian thing, which is good, I'm all for it. Lynn's indictment should not have happened. And now the government, they filed a 150-page resentencing memorandum. I don't think I've ever seen a 15-pager before, and I've been watching these things for a long, long time. We just don't do that. And they don't say a thing that makes any sense. They talk about she was an information hub. Well, let me tell you, for the 4 years, we were talking twice a week to the sheikh on the phone. She was never able to be on the phone. The phone calls all came into my office. I was on the phone when I was there. Other people in the office, there were only two others that were authorized to be on the phone. Translator was on the phone, only his co-defendants. Out of maybe 15 or 20 visits over 4 years, Lynn went on three. So she was the most remote from him, even though she was the most precious to him of the council. The difference was style, I guess, and maybe they thought they had something, but the idea that, and nothing happened, I mean, that no one's claimed that anybody ever got hurt from anything she said. He said he could have, but I doubt that. But in addition to Lynn, if you need any addition, and you really do, not that her cause isn't enormous, but at stake is the future of sentencing in the United States. We've just been through the guidelines and finally gotten rid of them, and they were barbaric. They tripled the prison population in the United States. They're like the Rockefeller Law. Some guy didn't do anything. One night he had coke with a girlfriend or something. 15-year mandatory minimum. Absolutely crazy. The trial judge has to be the person who determines the sentencing. He's the only person that's there that sees the whole thing, that can understand the whole thing. These guys up on the circuit, they can't. First, if they read the whole record, they couldn't ever get the flavor. They haven't ever, they don't even see the person. And for them to start trying to review these things, they don't claim there's an error of law in the sentencing. They just claim too lenient. Then there's a question of effective assistance for unpopular people, for poor people. Lynn could represent people that never had a friend. They couldn't remember their parents, you know, but they had any. They were born in Bedlam and raised in hell. And they were running with the gang and all the rest from the beginning. Never had a friend. And they loved Lynn. She's the best thing that happened in their lives. And she's kept a lot of them out of the penitentiary, and she's kept a lot of them from having sentences that would have been life or long, except for her. But if we don't stand up for the lawyers that are handling these cases, then we're going to send a lot of people, particularly now, to prison for a long time, and we'll pay for it. We'll pay for it not only in the cost of prison, but in what happens to society, because it corrupts society and it manufactures crime. And finally, I hope we'll all stand up and never stop until it ends out. Thanks to all of you for being here, and we've got an angel that we need to help.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.